everyone, and welcome to the Hockey News Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, Edward Fraser, here with Ryan Kennedy, as always. Today, a bit of a different format. And usually, we have an interview, and we break down a team, and we look at a top prospect. And those are great, of course. But in the wake of the trade deadline, you just got to talk about trade deadline stuff. So we're going to do that for the entirety of the podcast today. Let's start with some of the teams who acquired the prospects, because of course that's what's most applicable to this format. And you got to start with the New York Rangers, Ryan. They got a heck of a haul.
Yeah, I mean, starting with Libor Hájek and Brett Howden, who they got from Tampa Bay in the Ryan McDonagh deal. These are two very good prospects. Libor Hájek, defenseman, played for the Czech Republic at the World Juniors, had a very strong tournament. You know, when we look at that squad, they were surprising. Although I did call them as my dark horse going in, I'm gonna do some humble brag there. Even though they got blown out twice in a row in the medal round, they had a chance at a medal.
Absolutely,
they had a chance, so they were my dark horse. Libor Hájek played a ton of minutes. I talked to Julien Brisebois, the assistant GM with Tampa Bay, during that tournament. He was very pleased with how Hájek had been progressing in the WHL with Saskatoon. And then, of course, he actually got traded to Regina because Regina's going to the Memorial Cup this year. They're hosting it. So you're getting high-end experience there. He played a ton of minutes, defensive guy. You know, there's some offense there. I'm not sure how much there is at the NHL level, but I think with Hájek, you're getting a guy who's going to play a lot of minutes and can be that shutdown guy, has some decent size. In Brett Howden, you get that 200-foot guy. He's got some skill. Won gold with Canada at the World Juniors. He plays for Moose Jaw in the WHL. They're one of the best teams in that league. I think they could have a very impressive playoff run. So for the New York Rangers, they get two guys right off the hop right there. They're very good. Now, before that, they got Yegor Rykov in the Michael Grabner deal from New Jersey. Rykov, saw him at the World Juniors 2 years ago. I think he's interesting. To me, he's still a bit of a high-risk, high-reward guy because the offense and the poise with the puck, obviously very nice, and he's got some good size. Defensively, he didn't impress me very much. Of course, he has time to work on that. He's playing for SKA St. Petersburg, which is the powerhouse in the KHL. Spent a little bit of time with their sort of like farm team, but mostly with the big squad. He's under contract for at least one more season there. I would suspect he'll probably come over to North America after that. At the same time, a lot of Rangers fans pointed out, as Igor Shesterkin, the excellent goaltending prospect that New York drafted, also playing for SKA. So those guys, they can come over as sort of a buddy package. And I think Rykov, he's got some nice upside. And I'd like to see him on North American ice first. I'd like to see him play for Hartford before he really gets a shot. But, a nice asset to pick up. And then Ryan Lindgren, very different, kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, where he's more known for his defense, playing for the University of Minnesota, not generating a ton of offense right now as a sophomore. But at the same time, the Gophers, you know, other than Casey Mittelstadt and Rem Pitlick, there's not a lot of offense going on that team. It's kind of an off year for the Gophers. But I like Lindgren's mobility. I like his leadership. He's worn a letter basically everywhere he's gone so far in his career. So, you know, you get guys like Hájek and Rykov and Lindgren, and all of a sudden, that pipeline that New York had, which was pretty barren because they had been going for it so many years, it was understandable why they didn't have a lot of prospects. They traded away picks. And, you know, I mean, they went pretty far, so you can't knock them for it. They didn't win, but they came close. I mean, what can you do? Sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Well, and especially after hitting what appears to be two home runs in the first round last year. Like, this is not just a deep prospect line, but a prospect line with some high-end prospects in it.
Yeah, you're totally right. With Elias Andersson and Philip Hedel, I thought they had a really great first round in particular in 2017. And that actually leads me to sort of the second half of this, which is the 2018 draft, the way they're set up right now. They got three first-rounders. They have their own. They have Boston's. They have Tampa Bay. They have two second-rounders, their own in New Jersey. And they have two third-rounders, their own in Boston. So what you have there is just so much flexibility. I love it. Like, even though the first-rounders aren't going to be high first-rounders, if there's a guy you really like, you package two of those and you move up and you get that player that you really want. And same with the second rounders and to an extent the third rounders as well. Maybe you use all those picks. Maybe you don't. Maybe you package them. And having that flexibility can be so key on draft day because everybody's board is different. And there may be a guy that you never thought you were going to get. And all of a sudden, he's sitting there if you move up a couple of spots. A perfect example of this was last year. Nashville ended up getting Ailey Tolvanen with the 30th pick. The Preds had no idea he was going to... There was no expectation that he would be there with that selection. But he fell into their lap, and now he's tearing it up in the KHL for them.
Late first rounders and second rounders and third rounders, they're like lottery tickets. I mean, the more of these things, the more of these players that you can pick... the more likely you're going to hit on a guy. And the other part of it, too, is that it allows you to take a little more of a risk on a guy when you have a second first-round pick or a third first-round pick. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you get your guy who you know you're going to get in the lineup because you need to fill a hole. But then you can take a little more of a risk on a guy who's a high-risk, high-reward player because if he doesn't pan out, you haven't completely whiffed on the first round.
Totally. And, I mean, we've seen that a couple of times. The St. Louis Blues are actually pretty good at it. So they take Robert Thomas with their first selection in 2017, but then they also got the final pick in that Ryan Reeves deal with Pittsburgh. They go with Klim Kostin, a guy who had shoulder surgery. He was playing over in Russia, so you're not sure if he'll come over or not. But the Blues, they really liked him. They took him with that second rounder, and sure enough, he came over to North America right away and has been playing in the AHL for them, has been pretty good, was pretty good at the World Juniors. And then you even go back years before that, they had two picks in the first round, and they selected Jaden Schwartz, but then they flipped David Rundblad for another pick, which was Vladimir Tarasenko. Another player where they're like, well, he might not come over right away, but, I mean, we really like his talent, and we'll be patient. If you didn't have that Jaden Schwartz pick, do you still make that Tarasenko pick? It's all kind of hindsight, but obviously both those picks worked out for them.
I don't want to spend too much time on the Rangers, but they were just the most fascinating team on the deadline for me. So I got a couple more questions. Is your thoughts about what they gave up? I mean, it's great that they acquired all these assets, but everybody kind of was talking in the office like, okay, this is a good haul if they just traded McDonough. Mm. What do you make of the throw-in of JT Miller as well?
Well, I'm kind of two minds when it comes to the JT Miller part because, yeah, it was steep. Mm. But at the same time, it always felt like Miller, like, for whatever reason, him and Alain Vigneault never seemed to jive on a long-term basis. And you saw Miller move up and down the lineup a lot. You see him at center. You see him at the wing. So it feels like the fit wasn't perfect in New York. So from their perspective, it's like, if we can get this deal done and it has to include Miller, then, you know, so be it. Like, if it was another team, maybe it wouldn't be as optimal. But for the Rangers, I feel like they never really had, like, a really good grip on where Miller was in their lineup. So it kind of felt like, you know what, like, give him a fresh start. We'll take the assets and we'll build again.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, JT Miller could go and become a 70 or 75 point player with Tampa Bay, and I don't think it would be surprising. But in New York, he was always kind of stuck in that 50 point range. One of the 28 guys the Rangers have on their roster who can score 50 points. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a really well-made point. And the other one I want to ask is where do the Rangers go from here? You know, is there more of a teardown to come, or are they trying to rebuild on the fly a la San Jose? And can they still win within that very small Henrik Lundqvist window that they have left?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lundqvist is the X factor there, because if he can regain his form, then I think it is kind of a rebuild on the fly, because you look at Elias Andersson and Filip Hedl, both of them are playing pro already. Doesn't seem like they're too far off. So maybe you get a bit of a pleasant surprise there where they have an outsized impact on your team next year. If Lundqvist can get back to like classic Hank status, then all of a sudden you're like, well, we're a lot faster now, particularly up front. Maybe we can kind of run with some of the dogs in the East. And I mean, look at Pekka Rinne in Nashville. Like, he's not a young guy, but he's playing some of his best hockey ever right now. So goalies, they're not like skaters where you can kind of say, you know, once you get to your 30s, you're kind of on the way down. For whatever reason, goalies are just different that way. You can still have really good netminders in their late 30s. Rene, Roberto Luongo is another one, still playing really good hockey. So I think Lundqvist is the X factor there. And I think the important thing now for New York is just, you know, don't get stuck with big long-term deals right now. Unless it's, you know, extending one of those guys, one of those young guys that you're really into, and even that's not going to happen for a couple of years. I think you just kind of roll with the guys you have, see where you're at, and, you know, maybe you're a seller at next year's deadline too. That's totally cool.
I wonder if the New York Rangers are looking across the Hudson at the New Jersey Devils and saying, maybe you can win with youth after all. The Montreal Canadiens, rumored to be really in sell-off mode. I don't think they did as much as many fans had expected or perhaps hoped. But again, a team that's kind of middling and I think is taking a wait-and-see approach, but still got some nice assets for their pipeline.
Yeah, what I like the best about the Habs right now is that they have 4 second-round picks in the 2018 draft. Chicago, Toronto, and Washington, along with their own. So again, maximum flexibility. And that Chicago pick, that could be kind of high. You look at how the Hawks are doing in the standings right now, that could be sort of higher than initially expected. So you look at that second round and, you know, we often talk about prospects in the sort of 25 to 40 range. And, you know, it's funny you were saying earlier about the end of the first round being a bit of a lottery. And the reason that is because, you know, you have tiers when it comes to the draft. And obviously you have the super high end, and then, you know, you get into like the top 10, then from 11 to 20 or so, you know, it's decent. You're probably going to get a player. And then it gets a little murky and you get guys where you completely whiff. And then you get guys where, you know, you'll take like a Ryan Getzlaff who turns into a superstar. So those 4 second rounders, again, they can package them and move up, or they can just take all those picks and really do, you know, a nice job of collecting assets. And Montreal, they've got a pretty good scouting staff. I think they could find some value in those picks and potentially get a player with first-round talent in the second round. It might be a guy who needs a couple more years. Maybe he's really skinny right now. Maybe he's undersized. But I think that, you know, if you scout it properly, having so many options, you could really do some fun things. Otherwise, you know, in the trade with Toronto for Thomas Plekanec, you know, in terms of the actual bodies, like Renat Valiev, I think maybe he's kind of a tweener in the NHL, particularly, you know, Montreal, they don't have a lot of depth on defense this particular second. Like if they brought him up for a couple of games to see what he could do, you know, that wouldn't shock me. He's more of a defensive guy, not too much of an offensive upside that I would see at the NHL level, but he can play some minutes for you. Kirby Reichel, I'd like to see what he can do simply because it feels like he's really waiting for his chance to get to the NHL. And, you know, maybe going over to Laval, which is a much weaker AHL team than the Toronto Marlies, maybe he can make some noise there and maybe warrant a call-up. It'll be interesting to see.
I thought Mike Riley was a decent pickup, and, you know, he didn't look bad. I think if a guy ever needed a fresh start, it was him.
Yeah, and, you know, Minnesota, there's another team that sometimes you just don't have space for players. And, you know, Riley, he got some chances. But I think you're right. There's still some upside there. And sometimes it just does take a little more opportunity. Look at, like, 75% of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, Riley brings a factor to it with him that Montreal's defense could certainly use at this point. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a lot of buzz simply because the Islanders were in town about the Montreal Canadiens being in on the John Tavares lottery this summer, assuming he gets to that point. And there was some talk about whether they hung on to guys like Pacioretty because they were going to try to make a pitch to him and say, listen, we're still on the cusp of winning. We just need a few things to go right for us. Any chance in your mind that John Tavares ends up with the Montreal Canadiens?
It doesn't seem like a fit to me, simply because I think Montreal's defense is it's too flawed for Tavares to go all in. And I mean, like, he fits that. Then, like, yeah, Montreal needs John Tavares, but I just feel like if he's going to free agency, he can literally pick any team in the league yes. that he wants to go to. So I think for John Tavares, like, he's in win now mode, and it just doesn't seem like a fit to me.
If anybody's ever strikes me as a guy who'd be willing to leave some money on the table to win, it'd be John Tavares. And I think Montreal, really, their only pitch is, we got Carey Price, he can win some stuff, and we can offer you cap max.
Right.
Which, again, if you're John Tavares, I think you're looking at a situation in which you can win. And if you're just going to stay on a team that has potential, the team you're on now probably has better potential.
Yeah, you might as well. I mean, Tavares he's done so much for that community surrounding the Islanders that you're right. Like, he might as well just stay in New York where, you know, they have Matt Barzal and they have a decent defense core and, you know, they have a couple of other guys that he's familiar with, like Anders Lee and Josh Bailey, that they play very well together.
Yeah, a fellow Atlantic Division bottom scrapers, the Ottawa Senators. They were obviously in sell mode. Again, another team that I don't think fans were in any way asking for them to do more. I think a lot of fans were scared that they were going to do more, but they did make a few moves.
Yeah, and you know, from a prospect angle, getting Philip Gustavsson from Pittsburgh in the Derek Brassard deal, I thought that was a really good move for Pierre Dorion. Philip Gustavsson, to me, he's one of the better prospect goalies out there. I think, you know, there's the Russians like Shesterkin and Sorokin and Samsonov. And then, of course, you have Carter Hart, the Flyers pick that helped Canada win gold. But Gustavsson, he had just as good a World Juniors as Carter Hart. Neither were, like, super tested along the way, but Gustavsson's the kind of guy that can steal you a game. He's athletic. He's big. I don't think he's too far off. He's still having, you know, good season over in Sweden. And it fills a big need for the Senators. They don't have much of a goalie pipeline going right now. So I think he really helps them in that respect. Interesting note. So they have two 2018 picks, partially because of how bad they are. In the Matt Duchene deal, there was a conditional first rounder, and if Ottawa was picking bottom 10, they kept their 2018 first rounder, Colorado gets their 2019 first rounder. As far as I can tell, there's almost no way that Ottawa will be picking outside the top 10 at this point. I mean, they're bottom three in the league. Even if they lost every lottery, they'd still be picking sixth. So they're going to keep that, and they have Pittsburgh's first rounder. So, you know, things aren't, like, hopeless in Ottawa from that perspective. You know, they have Thomas Chabot. They have Logan Brown. The pipeline's not thick, but two first-rounders, you can get some stuff done. So all is not lost.
No. Sense fans.
And everything, and they still have the greatest defenseman in the world on their roster, and that can go a long ways.
That's right. For now.
For now. That's true. For now. I shouldn't even...
Until draft day.
I shouldn't consider that he's going to for sure be in that uniform next year. The Detroit Red Wings, another team... it's funny. There were so many teams expected to do more. This was the one that really shocked me. I can't believe that Mike Green was not traded. But they still have a large selection of draft picks in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, and it seemed like the neck injury was the thing that really killed all the Mike Green trade talk, so that's unfortunate. You know, I mean, what do you do other than, I mean, I guess they could have traded him a month prior, but you can't foresee those sort of things. So luckily for Detroit, they'd set themselves up pretty well already. 8 picks in the first 4 rounds for 2018. They're spread out through the rounds, so, you know, Ken Holland and his staff, they can really do some damage rebuilding that pipeline. They've got some nice young assets right now. Like, I think Detroit's in a spot where if you're a Wings fan, you have to gird yourself for pain for another year or two, but at least you can say, okay, well, Dylan Larkin, he could be a number one center. He's got the speed. He's figuring things out in the NHL. Like, he could be our guy. You know, Michael Rasmussen, he could be your shutdown guy. If things really break well, maybe he's a second line center, but at worst, he's a really good shutdown center. You know, Anthony Mantha's not that old. Andreas Athanasiou's not that old. You know, they've got some defense prospects like Dennis Cholowski, who I still think need more time, but, you know, time is on your side. So you get these eight picks. I think they can really start sort of pile on and really get that pipeline humming again. So that's good. And another interesting thing is in the Peter Mrazek deal with Philadelphia, the conditional pick, you know, when they made it at the time, it might have been a fourth rounder, but if the Flyers made the playoffs and Mrazek played, I think it was like five games, and it becomes a third rounder. That's definitely happening now. Philly's in first place in the division. They're red hot. It could even be a second rounder if they make the conference final and Mrazek, I believe it's, wins six playoff games. That's possible. I don't know how probable it is. I mean, again, they're the hottest team in the league right now, so you can't discount them. But it's great for Detroit. I mean, things are certainly going in their direction in terms of those conditional picks right now.
I certainly like the haul they got for Thomas Tatar.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of people are like, oh, that's a lot for Vegas to give up. But for me, it's like, well, it's three different years.
Sure.
So for the Golden Knights, I was like, well, that's okay. You're getting a guy with term. But you're right. Like, for the Red Wings to get a first rounder and a couple of other picks, again, just like giving yourself that flexibility and making those picks in abundance, where with two first rounders, like, if you think about it this way, you know, it's like you're going to get like two World Junior standouts. You know, if you play your cards right and if it all sets up right. So for the Wings, it's like it's funny. They're in a new situation for them because for years they hadn't picked high. Now they're getting multiple picks in the first round, and a lot of them are going to be high because it's their own pick. It's going to be fun to see what they can do.
Was there any teams out there that you were kind of disappointed with what they did in terms of acquiring prospects for the future?
Yeah, I'm going to look at two sellers here. Vancouver and Buffalo. With Vancouver, they didn't get any picks for 2018. And for me, like, the thing is, the Canucks have some really great prospects. I think they have the makings of a really nice nucleus going forward. When you look at Brock Besser, Bo Horvat, Elias Pettersson, Olioulevi, Thatcher Demko in net, Adam Gaudette coming out of college, like, that's a really nice base to work from. Cole Lind actually just signed his entry-level deal today, so there's another player with top six potential on the wing. But I wanted a big draft for them this summer. I wanted them to just sort of like push it to the next level. And right now they don't even have seven picks. They don't even have a pick in every round right now. I think they're missing their fourth rounder. So that was kind of disappointing. And Buffalo, I'm sure I speak for a lot of Sabres fans, where they didn't get anything in 2018 for Evander Kane. It's 2019 from the Sharks, and there's conditions on the picks. And, you know, maybe Jason Botterill was up against it because teams were bidding on Kane.
Well, Kane did them no favors by going in the absolute toilet over the past 2 months.
Certainly didn't help either. But again, like Buffalo, it feels like the rebuild should be taking hold already, and it hasn't. Yeah. And, like, I don't... Like, okay, Casey Mittelstadt, for me, he's in the NHL next year.
Sure.
Right? Like, he's going to, for me, it just seems like a natural that he'll leave the NCAA, turn pro. I think that he'll hit the ground running. You know, there'll be some great offensive opportunities. We'll see what he can do. You know, do you play him with Eichel? Do you play him behind Eichel? It'll be fun to watch. Other than that, like, we're still waiting on Alex Nylander. Who knows what's going to happen there? Brendan Goulet, I think, you know, there's some potential there, but I wouldn't put him at like the high end. So I would have liked to see Buffalo get more for this draft, but they didn't really add in that respect. So it's just going to be, they're just going to have to do their best, really. I mean, they're really going to have to hit on that pick. I mean, I guess I should preface this by saying if they win the lottery and they get Rasmus Dahlin, then apologies all around. It doesn't matter who else you draft. You get Rasmus Dahlin, your draft is a success. So I guess that's the silver lining for Buffalo, is they have a really good shot at the number one overall pick. But having said that, I mean, you can never have too many draft picks.
Sure. I want to finish off by talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, this is a team that's going all in. but they can afford to. And that's, yeah. I think, the lesson that so many teams can learn from this situation is you've got a great roster, but you can never have enough in the pipeline that you can use to acquire assets when you need them, and then you still have a plethora of guys who can come up and fill those spots when eventually, because of your success, guys go to other teams because they're going to get overpaid for other teams. So Tampa really has become the team that everybody wants to emulate at this point because they've got the system as well as the great success.
Yeah, and it's really fun to watch Steve Yzerman and his front office in action right now because you look at the pipeline and, I mean, the NHL team's stacked. They're one of the best in the league. They're all good there. Somehow they managed to get all those players under contract for this season. You know, that they can deal with Kucherov and Tyler Johnson later. For now, they're going for the cup. Totally understand it. But then, you know, you trade Jonathan Drouin. You manage to get a younger elite player in Mikhail Sergachev on his entry-level deal. So that helps you out right there. Yanni Gourde, you know, you find that there's a great find there. You know, he might not win the Calder, but I mean, he's at least like in the conversation in terms of like, I think he'll probably get some like fourth or fifth place votes.
Yeah, rookie of the month for February.
Rookie of the month for February, exactly right there. And then something that just came down the pipeline, Tampa signed Alex Barré-Boulet from the Blainville Boisbriand Armada.
Woo, that's a lot of bees.
That's you know what? I never realized that he's like ABB playing for the BBA. Wow. Mind blown. But anyways, other than that silly wordplay. So they signed him as a free agent. He was undrafted, 1997 birthday, playing for a great outfit in the Quebec League. He's undersized. But he's got 104 points already. Season's not even over. I saw him actually in the preseason, and he looked pretty good, you know. Like, and again, he's like a Yanni Gourde type, where he's not the biggest guy in the world, he's not the strongest guy, but he gets his points. And if you're Tampa Bay, it's free, right? You didn't need a draft pick. You signed him as a free agent. He'll play for Syracuse next year. You see what he can do, and then you still have Mitchell Stevens. You still have Anthony Cirelli. Like, you still got prospects. You managed to bolster yourself for a Stanley Cup run and not completely kill your pipeline. And, I mean, hats off to Steve Yzerman and co. for doing that. They've proven in his era that they can draft really well with, you know, Al Murray and the whole staff there. And then they make these finds. And when you're a winning team, it becomes easier to attract talent because you say, like, look, if you can make our roster, you might win a Stanley Cup.
That's all we've got for the World of Prospects this week. We'll be back with the standard format next week. For Ryan Kennedy, I'm Edward Fraser. Thanks for listening.